This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com and ClimateGate.tv. It's the 4th of March, 2010, and today I'm joined by Mark Morano, former communications director for Senator James Inhofe on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, and currently the man behind the extremely popular ClimateDepot.com. Mr. Morano, thank you for joining me today on the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I want to talk specifically today about an article that you had up on ClimateDepot.com last month that was running under the title Population Bomb. Author Paul Ehrlich suggested adding a forced sterilization agent to stable food and water supply. And I thought this was an extremely effective article because it sometimes I think when we're discussing the ongoing anthropogenic climate change hoax, we tend to lose sight of the forest for the trees of the individual stories that are popping up and which you keep track of on ClimateDepot.com in an excellent manner, but we lose sight of the bigger picture, which I think is a virulent anti-human agenda that's being pushed through this faulty pseudoscience. And for those who haven't read this article yet, it really is a painstaking expose of what's driving the people who are using this climate change scam as a type of pseudoscientific gloss for their real ideology. So, Mr. Morano, why don't you start by breaking down this article for us, and let's start with the 1972 article in the Boca Raton News that serves as the starting point for the article itself.
Yeah, what I did is, and at Climate Depot, what I try to do is have, beyond just climate, I have deforestation issues, we have overpopulation, a whole bunch of environmental issues, and I actually have keyword labels that people can follow. This would follow under overpopulation. And what this was an article that came out February 19th at Climate Depot, and the headline was Population Bomb Author Suggested, as you mentioned, Forced Sterilization. And what it is it was a 1972 article, June 16th, for part of the Newsweek feature service, and the title of that article was Expert on Population, Please Buy Response. And the article goes on to say that in 1969, Ehrlich said if voluntary birth reduction methods did not work, a nation might have to resort to the addition of a temporary sterilant to staple food or water supply. And at the time, the newspaper quoted a critic saying that Ehrlich's views were worse than Hitler, in quotes. I don't like Nazi analogies better than anyone else, but you know, this certainly seems very apt here. And so this is back in 1972. The face of modern environmental movement was being exposed in these newspapers. Now, what's shocking about this is not that, oh, you know, this is just some crank from the early 70s. Why are we paying attention to it? This is the father, one of the godfathers, I should say, of the modern environmental movement. He is revered. To this day, Paul Ehrlich is winning awards. To this day, people like Obama science advisor John Holdren are praising him. John Holdren co-authored books with John Holdren in the 1970s. But let's continue here just so you have an idea of what John Holdren's all about. It says the 1972 article says one of Ehrlich's most, I'm sorry, not John Holdren, but Paul Ehrlich, one of Ehrlich's most controversial positions is in 1972 is that countries like the U.S. cannot urge underdeveloped nations to forego industrial development in the interest of ecology while it remains a burgeoning economic force. And he wrote, it is urged the U.S. to, quote, de-develop and restore its environment and set an example for countries in Latin America, Asia, and Africa. Now let's think of the perverted morality and ethics inherent in Ehrlich's suggestion. He's saying the U.S. should de-develop so we can set a model of undevelopment, if that's the right word, for Latin America, Asia, Africa. Keep in mind, this is 1972. We are now in 2010. In Latin America, Asia, Africa have about 1.6 billion people still without running water, still without electricity, that are leading nasty, brutish, and short lives, living in huts made of dung, burning dung, living in huts made of mud. And he is somehow romanticizing that as being earth-friendly, that people are living with high infant mortality rates, with no modern medicine, no modern dentistry, no defibrillators, no modern hospitals, no basic sanitation, no clean air, no clean water. This is put up as an environmental ideal. It's a perversion of science. Paul Ehrlich should be disgraced scientifically, politically, and culturally. Instead, he's given awards and he's praised by current members of this administration. It's a perversion of science. And if you continue here, he is saying the U.S. should de-develop. Well, this is the same theme we're finding. The head of Greenpeace just came out and basically said that economic growth was bad. We have former Governor Jerry Brown at the Earth Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa. I interviewed him, and he said that the developing world can't emulate the Western world's prosperity. Here we have a guy who lives in California, flew to Africa to tell this message to the 1.6 billion people without even basic subsistence level existence, that they can't have what we have because the earth can't handle it. And keep in mind, this is a white politician in the U.S. telling people predominantly of color in the developing world that they can't have running water, electricity, and they can't have their children survive childhood in many instances, what we're talking about here. So Paul Ehrlich was the leader, and he had the foresight back in the early 70s to project all this. And that's fine if someone wants to do that, but how the environmental movement responds to this. And just to give you an example of how prevalent this perversion of science, economics, culture, and politics is, James Hansen, the NASA scientist, the gatekeeper of NASA's global temperature database, has come out now and endorsed a book calling for ridding the world of industrial civilization, in quotes. Hansen declared that the author, quote, has it right, the system is the problem. The book goes on to demand razing of cities to the ground, blowing up dams, switching off greenhouse gas emission machine, unquote. Our lead NASA global warming scientist in 2010 is endorsing a book calling for the razing of civilization. Echoes of Paul Ehrlich in the 1970s. So that's why the environmental movement can't say, oh, we're just cherry-picking a few quotes from Paul Ehrlich in the early 70s. No, we're picking quotes that are the basic foundation of the modern environmental movement. It's just nakedly exposed and written in a blunt phrase without all the niceties. We're seeing that the top leaders today, John Holdren, James Hansen, of the Global Warming Alarm Movement, are 100% subscribers to the lunacy of Paul Ehrlich, a man who, by the way, in a moment of clarity, and I use that word in every tense, I use that phrase and how it's supposed to be, in 2009, October 8th, said, this is Paul Ehrlich, I wish I'd taken more math in high school and college. That would have been useful if I were writing the population bomb. This was a silly scare book which utterly failed any basic scientific test when it came to population models. He now says, Ehrlich says he wished he'd be more careful about predictions. So he realizes that his own scientific inadequacy embarrassed him, but he also realizes that given our culture today, the media and the modern environmental movement, that he's still getting awards. And let me see here. I actually have the award, just so your listeners know what it is. He received the Ramaph Margalef Award for Lifetime Achievements in Ecology, I believe, from Stanford University, August 7, 2009. And here's what they said when he received this award. Ehrlich is one of the most influential ecologists of our age. He's done an enormous amount of path-breaking work and continues to lead in addressing the major issues of our time, unquote. Well, Paul Ehrlich, if he's a leader in the major issues of our time, then science has been turned on its head. It's become anti-science. Paul Ehrlich should go down in history as one of the most disgraced scientists that we've ever seen. I hope I answered your question.
It certainly did.
I didn't mean to filibuster. Do you want me filibustering like that?
Filibustering is fine, certainly, when we're exposing people and people with an ideology like that. And you raised the point earlier that you don't like using the Nazi analogy, but I think it's actually particularly apt here, because what we see with this anti-human agenda is really the confluence of the modern environmental movement. We see the global warming hype, and we also see the overpopulation fear-mongering, both of which I think really do have their genesis in the eugenics movement, which of course carried over from England and America to Germany in the 1930s, where it helped provide the pseudo-scientific justification for the Nazis and the Holocaust. So I don't think it is hyperbole to point out the links here.
I agree with what you're saying, and sometimes these analogies can be apt. I didn't make the analogy. I was quoting a 1972 newspaper article. That's number one. Number two, the real problem with any and all Nazi analogies, though, is once you bring it into a debate, no matter how apt, it just clouds it, and then it just becomes, you know, there's an actual rule how long in a debate before someone brings up a Nazi analogy. But it does, because of the overuse of it, it does take it away when it's actually appropriate. But, you know, it's just one of those things, once you mention that phrase, it just changes the argument and people lose sight of the point you're trying to make. But, you know, no matter how apt the argument may be.
That's right. Well, you do raise some of in that article. You go into a lot of detail, but you also raised some of the other people who were involved in this, like John Holdren, and you mentioned that in 1977, Paul Ehrlich and John Holdren co-authored a book called Ecoscience. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, this is the book, and this has been throughout the news. They were calling for, again, the de-development of the United States. And this is something John Holdren has now tried to distance himself from by saying, well, it was a textbook, and I did different authors, and I, you know, wasn't responsible for everything in there. But here's some of the quotes from the book. This is the original book, 1973, with Paul Ehrlich and his wife. A massive campaign must be launched to restore a high-quality environment in North America and de-develop the United States. And then it goes on, Holdren, who's now, by the way, he's the director of the White House Office of Technology Policy, he said, quote, this is, hold on a second there. Holdren said, they, quote, they need to, for redevelopment presents our economy with a major challenge. They must redesign a stable, low-consumption economy in which there's a more equitable distribution of wealth. So we see where this is going after originally. This is a political socialist at its base ideology movement, and they did in 1977 the science textbook, which Holdren co-authored with Ehrlich, has been actually made it to the way of congressional hearings. Senator Vitter from Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana, came out and really pounded Holdren on these issues. But all they got from Holdren was, well, he's just distancing himself from this old book. And this also had to deal with a lot of other, you know, issues, especially related to population and dealing with abortion and family planning. I mean, some people termed it that the White House czar called for forced abortion, and they called it, quote, the comprehensive planetary regime could control development, distribution of all natural resources. This was the book that John Holdren was involved in. So it's really frightening stuff. Holdren and Ehrlich actually said the planetary regime, quote, might be given responsibility for determining the optimum population of the world and for each region and for arbitrating various countries' shares with their regional limits. The regime would have some power to enforce agreed limits, unquote. Think about that. John Holdren in 1977 is essentially calling for global governance on population issues. This was the scare of the day, right? Along with global cooling, by the way. What? Fast forward 30 years, and what do we have? The scare of the day, man-made global warming. What do we have? Al Gore calling for global governance to deal with man-made global warming. The UN calling for global governance. Former French President Jacques Chirac calling for global governance. Most shocking, the German climate advisor calling for a CO2 budget for every man, woman, and child on the planet, monitored by an international government that would keep track of your car mileage, your energy use, your airline travel, probably at some point your outdoor barbecuing, your fireplace use, your use of your electric or gas range. We're talking a level of control that people or George Orwell didn't contemplate. So what they've done, it's a plug-and-play scare. The 1970s overpopulation, hey, we need an international body to manage this. We need forced sterilization agents. Some people interpret that as forced abortions. At the same time, 30 years later, the global warming movement comes up with the same exact goal, same exact means to achieve them. They just plugged in another bogus eco-scare that we've been conned, they've tried to con the American people and the international community with. It is frightening. It is the same methods and ideology the environmental movement has employed since the late 1960s. And again, it always comes down to we know what's best for you. If you go back at the global cooling scare, the same language. We have to act now. This is man-made global cooling. The aerosols are blocking the sun. We have global dimming. We need to put soot in the Arctic, ashes in the Arctic to try to melt it because it's freezing up too fast. And guess what they predicted? Same thing. Stuff like famine, drought, increased war, all kinds of wacky weather, all because of man-made cooling. Well, guess what? That didn't work so well. That died by about 1980, and they waited 8 years and then launched global warming, and they came up with the same rhetoric. It's literally plug and play the rhetoric. Change the actual scare, but keep all the same solutions and all the same dire consequences if we don't act. The modern environmental movement is guilty of one of the greatest con jobs in the history of our planet when it comes to baseless eco scares. And you can go through it, whether it's the deforestation, the Amazon rainforest. We had people predicting the Amazon would be gone by the year 1990, 2000. We had people saying there were X amount of football fields a minute clearing and it was disappearing. And now you fast forward to 2009, and you have the New York Times finally admitting for every acre of rainforest cut, maybe 50 are estimated to be growing back. People are leaving the jungles. They're calling them the galloping jungles. They're quoting people saying maybe it wasn't such an urgent eco-scare after all. So if you go back and you also look at the resource scarcity, Paul Ehrlich, by the way, was involved in that. The idea that we were facing this, we're going to be facing famines and that we wouldn't have the resources to feed this insanely driving global population. Well, guess what? He did a bet in 1979. And it was, again, Paul Ehrlich discredited. And he, of course, tried to spin that. He did a bet with economist Julian Simon. And the idea was that in 1980, they picked five resources. And they said, Ehrlich's choosing, by the way. And he said, be more expensive in 10 years. Ehrlich lost. 10 years later, in 1990, every one of the resources that Ehrlich had handpicked had declined in price by an average of 40%. So here's another thing that I think Paul Ehrlich and his regret about not having more science capability. One of the things the modern environmental movement owes a debt of gratitude toward Paul Ehrlich is Paul Ehrlich and a few other people had made these outrageous, baselessly scientific predictions in their lifetime. Some of these predictions they made, the dire consequences would happen in 5, 10, 20, 25 years. Well, guess what? They all lived long enough to be humiliated. So what did they learn from Paul Ehrlich? And this is where he probably the only thing he's been useful to them really for. They learned if you're going to come up with a dire eco-scare and you have a deadline for when the dire consequence is about to happen, it better be so far into the future. And here's how you can tell they've learned. If you listen to the global dire predictions of your latest eco-scare, you'll look at the date of birth of the person making the dire prediction, and then look at the year the dire prediction is supposed to happen, and you've found one thing we've learned. The person making the dire prediction will be long dead before you can verify whether they're right or wrong. And that is where Paul Ehrlich has probably done the only service to the modern environmental movement. He's taught them, push your dire predictions and your scare campaigns to long after you're dead, because you don't want to have to face any kind of scrutiny on it. And that's why I think, he has been useful.
Right. Well, maybe that's an indicator that Glacier Gate was a genuine mistake, because they put it much too early. People will still be alive.
2035, I believe. Right. Yeah, 2135. Yeah, 2035.
Right. Well, we'll still be around at that time. So,
Let me just continue here, just to show you how in my piece on the February 19th piece, Ehrlich's views on the human race permeate the global warming movement of today. And what do I mean by that? Let's take a little walk down the wacky world of modern environmentalism. New York Times columnist Tom Friedman, in Taiwan, I'm going to tell you, this is a quote, I'm going to tell you a secret, there are too many Americans in the world today, unquote. Ooh, popular science, this is a question they're now asking, September 18th, 2009, should the right to bear children be more regulated, or is it a fundamental right that we should be able to breed nilly-willy even if it destroys the planet, unquote. So the population control still permeating, even though it's been completely disgraced scientifically. Even Grist magazine ran an article, I think it was 2005 or 6, the Eco magazine, saying is underpopulation the new world problem. And they're going through all the birth rates. The bottom line is what they've done and what Paul Ehrlich just idiotically did in the early 70s, they got these models that said, if this continues, we're going to have X amount of growth here and X amount of growth here. Very similar to what people do today to try to scare you about the Arctic or anything else. They'll say, well, the Arctic's warmed up X amount at 15 degrees. If this warming trend continues over the next 300 years, why? Well, no. That's like looking at your 1-year-old child and saying, wow, they've grown a lot in a year. If this growth rate continues, my child's going to be 30 feet high. They have no allowance for the natural stabilization that occurs, and particularly when it comes to population, we're finding that as countries become more developed, their population slows. So these wild-eyed estimates, of these growth rates are now scientifically laughable. Paul Ehrlich deserves derision and mockery and laughter from the scientific community. He should be disgraced, not given awards. Beyond that, well, let's take a look at some other things. Climate activist Michael Tobin is basically saying, telling a mother of, I think it was a mother of 9 kids, that's hard to imagine she could keep up on complex issues. Therefore, her opinion on things like global warming aren't relevant. This is a scientist who says, I think having more 2 children per family in an overcrowded world is ethically dubious. So they're still promoting this idea that, you know, children are a burden and children are evil and sinful and essentially wrong. And now here's some other things. There's still Ehrlich's call for de-developing it. Obama, this is a perversion of morality. President Obama is supporting limiting development in poverty-stricken nations right now. This is this year, January 25th. Obama to World Bank, don't fund coal-fired plants in developing countries due to global warming fears. This is the modern eco-scare is once again the victims of this scare are predominantly people of color, 1.6 billion people who don't have the basics, running water and electricity, living a subsistence lifestyle. Wealthy Western leaders are telling them they can't have modern energy that would bring them infrastructure and all these in modern medicine. In 2002, Gar Smith, a leading environmentalist, lamented the introduction of electricity in Africa. Again, this is, you know, the idea, this is a white man basically reminiscing that Africans should be, you know, be in a tribal world living in huts, and he doesn't like the idea of what electricity has done to their culture, and it's wrong and it's bad for the planet. This would be, you know, elitist racism if we were being blunt and honest. And I've already mentioned Jerry Brown. A Ugandan activist in 2009 put it bluntly, and this is an activist lamenting all of this, you know, de-development that Paul Ehrlich and the modern movement, Europeans, quote, African lifespan is lower today in 2009 than it was in the U.S. and Europe 100 years ago. But Africans are told we simply shouldn't develop because wealthy Western nations are worried about global warming. And they go on to say telling Africans they can't have electricity and economic development is immoral. So Al Gore is right. It is a moral question. The problem is the modern environmental movement is and has been on the wrong side of the morality on this issue for decades. And here's an interesting one. I interviewed a South African activist, development activist, in 2003. And he said that poor countries should tell the wealthy countries, in other words, paging Jerry Brown, paging modern environmental movement, the poor countries should tell the wealthy Western nations to go to hell. And he says, quote, if the wealthy Western nations don't want the poor countries in wetlands, then they should, the U.S. and other Western cities should be bombed like Washington, Holland, and Rotterdam and restore them to swamps, jungles, and wetlands. And actually, to give it Paul Ehrlich credit, he was basically saying that. And that's what, you know, they're actually saying the U.S. should de-develop so that the developing world doesn't look with envy at the U.S. So at least there's a little bit of bizarre consistency there, but the bottom line is most environmentalists. I interviewed an environmental activist again at this Earth Summit in South Africa. They were flying around the world. I called them green missionaries, going in and telling the people without running water, without electricity, living in dire poverty, dying early, their children dying young, telling them that they were doing it right, that the U.S. was doing it wrong, and that they should be proud of themselves for living such a primitive existence. But same people that make these claims, and one of them being a guy named Keating from Rainforest Relief, said that people lived just fine for thousands of years without running water and electricity. Well, he himself had faxes, phone numbers, and took the example of the modern world. You know, until people start going to live in the developing world in huts made of dung, burning dung for an existence, breathing in all the smoke, eating the food that the developing world's forced to eat, and drinking the water, they have no business. No business. It's particularly the Hollywood celebrity set flying around in private jets and living in L.A. in multiple homes have no business telling the developing world that they can't have the prosperity and wealth and modern conveniences that the Western world has. It's a moral question. And some people have called it, Philip Stott, the UK scientist, has called it a new form of colonialism. He calls it neo-colonialism, where you're going to have the white, wealthy Western world managing the energy economies of these poor nations, all again based on Paul Ehrlich's, you could call it visionary, some would say madness, leadership back in the late 60s and early 70s. So this new form of colonialism, again, is just as destructive and, you know, many people would say much worse than any of the original colonialism, because this is all negative. You know, you could argue the original forms of colonialism at least brought modern civilization, modern medicine, some progress, but it also brought, of course, you know, the continuing horrors of slavery and torture and a lot of death and destruction and cultural, you know, people would say cultural genocide. But this new form form of colonialism may be worse than the original colonialism, because we are now talking about a colonialism that sends in Oxfam to African nations and teaches them that they can use a bullocks or animals for plowing fields, that they're doing it right, that they don't need to bring in modern agricultural equipment. So just to give you a few more examples of Paul Ehrlich's legacy today, people in Chad in 2009, this is an article, Chad's global warming inspired ban on charcoal leads to desperate families. And their environmental minister said, of course, cooking is a fundamental necessity, but so are concerns about global warming. Again, people at barely subsistence levels paying the price for Al Gore and the latest eco-scare. Poor Kenyans rebel. A UK grocery store, I think it was in 2007. Here was a grocery store in England trying to do the politically correct thing by lowering the carbon footprint. We're not going to export fruit from faraway countries. Well, guess what? Poor African farmers were the ones impacted by these decisions. India has been very blunt in this. They've told the UN it is really wrong for us to reduce emissions when 40% of Indians do not have access to electricity. Let's repeat that. It is morally wrong. In other words, they're not going to sign on to an energy rationing treaty. The leadership of India gets it. They're not going to reduce it when 40% of their residents don't have electricity. And then it continues. You know, green and rich African elites impose deadly anti-development colonialism. I was in a debate with George Monbiot, the UK environmentalist, and we were talking about Copenhagen. This was at Copenhagen in December 2009. And we were talking about, you know, these African nations essentially agreeing to being have their development controlled by international authorities and being tell their people that they can't develop. I was saying it was immoral, a new form of colonialism. And his retort was, well, why are these African leaders signing up for it? Here they are, you know, it's so bad. Why is the leadership here begging them for the money and begging to have this done? Well, the very simple reason. The leadership is the one that's going to benefit. Corrupt third world dictators and the like are going to be the ones benefiting from this, you know, again, subsidies. This is what Tom Arnold, the Hollywood actor who married to Roseanne Barr, told me at Earth Day 2000 in Washington. We need to subsidize the developing nations. We can't allow them to develop. We have to control the development, and we'll subsidize them. We'll give them enough so that they can have a better lifestyle, so maybe not as many of them will die, and we'll give them some basic necessities, but we have to manage it. And that's the same thing George Monbiot missed, is all these African leaders, Asian leaders, South American leaders, the people clamoring for this, want it because this is going to be like basically a foreign aid check that they can do whatever they want with. And it is all just rife with corruption. But it doesn't mean the actual people in the country are benefiting from this kind of perverted, immoral energy policy. So the bottom line is, someone else who's recognized this is Patrick Moore, one of the founding members of Greenpeace, who left the group in the 80s because they were too radical. He now calls the modern environmental movement the most anti-human agenda around today. And if you look at it again, it just goes on and on. Chevy Chase, the actor, has said socialism works. Cuba might prove that. And it's just this elitist attitude that the rest of the world needs. They can't have what we have because the earth can't handle it. We need to keep them down in many ways. And it's a perversion. But you know, there's been some bright spots. The Washington Post in 2009, September, in poorer nations, energy trumps climate issues. And they said millions of people are eager to buy their first washing machines, refrigerators, air conditioners. The dearth of poverty hinders prosperity. So the Washington Post recognizes this. People in the developing world aren't sitting there looking at climate models of the year 2100 and saying, oh, my God, we better hurry up. We better not burn dung tonight in our hut because, you know, we're going to face a calamity. That's perversion. That's immoral. And not only is it scientifically discredited, but the bottom line is they need carbon-based energy. And I'll leave you with this thought. Carbon-based energy is one of the greatest liberators of mankind in the history of our planet. It has brought man out of a nasty, brutish, short existence. To the extent that people are battling a war on modern civilization, Paul Ehrlich helped launch this back in the 1960s. James Hansen carries the torch today, John Holdren, and many others in the modern environmental movement, including Green and Al Gore and across the board, all in varying degrees of of radicalism, but you know they're not all the extreme extent that Paul Ehrlich was back then. But it's the part that underpins their movement, and the fact that Paul Ehrlich's still winning awards today. Shame on them! Shame on them!
Well, Mr. Moreno,
I got a little bit off Ehrlich toward the end there, but I wanted to show you that his thoughts in the '60s and '70s are now being reality now.
Well, I probably couldn't have said it better myself, but I certainly couldn't have said it without stopping. So while you take a much-needed pause for breath, let me just say that I'm glad you're on our side. Absolutely an incredible amount of information, and there is a lot of information for people to look at on this issue. So why don't you direct people to your website?
Yeah, go to climatedepot.com. It's updated throughout the day, and this is, if you want to find, you can just look up Ehrlich or look up overpopulation in the search engine, and then you look up the little tags. I have tags, topic tags. You can look up everything from climate models to deforestation, to overpopulation, to sea levels, to hurricanes, to Arctic, Antarctic. Across the board, I try to cover every single possible topic, and you'll find from A to Z, the modern environmental movement quite simply has egg on their face.
Absolutely. Well, and thanks in large part to the work that you're doing exposing that egg. So thank you very much for all the work you're doing, and my hat's off to you. Mark Moreno, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you very much, and appreciate it.